This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A theater festival in the Eastern Panhandle is bringing unique voices to the Mountain State and asking audiences to engage with them.
It is our duty and responsibility to serve the community here.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump shocked the nation Saturday. Jack Walker reports that the governor is calling for unity.
Governor Jim Justice prayed for Trump and those affected by the shooting during a virtual press briefing Monday. He said it was a miracle that Trump survived and that the nation must put aside its political tensions.
From the standpoint of our politicians, we've got to amp down, you know, the rhetoric. We've got to get back to where we're respecting one another, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, independent, whatever it may be.
During the call, Justice expressed criticism of President Joe Biden's leadership and said the country has come to tolerate too much violence. He also said he will attend this week's Republican National Convention without, quote, 1 ounce of fear. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
A new study identifies what's driving up the cost of electricity. As Curtis Tate reports, it's not renewables.
Heavy reliance on fossil fuels, coal and natural gas, is driving up electricity prices in many regions of the country. That's the conclusion of Energy Innovation Policy and Technology, a nonpartisan research group. The group specifically cites West Virginia and its near total reliance on coal to supply its power. Coal-fired plants are aging and more expensive to maintain, while coal itself has a harder time competing with gas and renewables, particularly wind and solar. The state depends on coal for 89% of its electricity, the highest percentage of any state. Other states that have gone big on gas have found themselves paying for the volatility of gas prices in a global market, the group concluded, as well as extreme weather events that have squeezed supplies. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
July has brought an abnormally dry month, leading to drought conditions in many areas of the state. Brianna Heaney has more.
Around 60% of the state is experiencing moderate to severe drought conditions. Another 30% are experiencing dry conditions. Stream flow in West Virginia and the Appalachian region at large is low, with some streams at record low levels. Plants across the state are starting to dry out and turn to fall-like colors. A La Nina year, which usually means drier conditions for the eastern seaboard, paired with record heat waves, has translated into a dry, hot summer for the majority of the mountain state. Officials from the National Weather Service say that even though rain is likely to fall later in the week, it won't be enough to buck ongoing drought conditions. That will take a heavy, widespread, and lasting rain event that results in several inches of rainfall. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
Experts are concerned about a growing mental health crisis nationally. In this story from our sister station, WEKU, reporter Stan Ingold takes a look at the struggles faced by those dealing with mental health access in eastern Kentucky.
We're Appalachian people. We're seen as being strong, and that's kind of how we want to portray ourselves. And if you have any kind of mental illness, it's seen as a weakness.
Casey Wright is the system director of behavioral health, education, and psychological support for Appalachian Regional Healthcare. She says this is a stigma surrounding mental health that many people in eastern Kentucky face. Wright and her colleagues try to convince their patients this is not the case.
We try to tell our patients, just like if you have diabetes, you have to treat that. It's a medical condition. It's the same thing if you have depression. You have to treat that. That's a medical condition.
For some, it takes a major incident for them to make the decision to seek help.
I had a suicide attempt when I was 21.
That's Valerie Jones of Moorhead, Kentucky. She reached her tipping point almost 20 years ago. She says dealing with substance abuse and anxiety was getting to be too much for her to handle.
I just couldn't live like that. I couldn't live feeling depressed and I couldn't function. I couldn't work. I lost my job. That was when I was like, okay, it's time to do something.
But it hasn't been an easy road. Once she started getting help, it was hard to find consistency with her treatment.
My appointments would get canceled they would get rescheduled. And every third or fourth appointment that I would finally make it in for, I was constantly with a new therapist.
And she says seeing a new therapist every other visit was a struggle in and of itself. Joan says it's frustrating because she's constantly told that she needs to pair her medications with therapy.
But then, you know, I'm trying to hold up my end of the bargain, but then I keep getting canceled and basically told that, well, you know, it doesn't really matter.
She says sometimes it makes her lose heart.
And it just makes me not want to go. And I'm limited with what providers I have access to.
Joan works in the mental health field herself. She knows it isn't easy for those trying to help.
But as someone on the other end of that that's trying to get those services for myself and someone with anxiety, it's hard to just go in and talk to somebody, period.
This isn't the only hurdle that people face. Casey Wright with ARH says in Southeast Kentucky, sometimes even just getting to the appointment is difficult.
You don't have Uber here. We don't have taxis here. We don't have things like that. Most of our people live, you know, in haulers and things like that that are not close to town. So it's really hard for our people to find a ride to even get to any of their mental health appointments.
Paulina Jones is the director of counseling and psychological services at ARH. She says public transportation isn't much of an option either.
When you have to make an appointment for them to come and get you, you have to do it 3 days in advance. So some of our patients don't even have telephones. And then even for Wi-Fi, there's not good Wi-Fi service here as either.
Paulina Jones says another stumbling block for those seeking help is finances. Many of the people who get help from ARH are on Medicaid. But for others, it can be much more difficult to pay for treatment.
But if you have Medicare, only certain providers can get paid for that. And if you have private or like insurance, you're only allotted so many days of like outpatient therapy. So you may be only getting 10 days to clear up whatever the issue is.
Jones says while they have several inpatient facilities for those dealing with substance use disorder, there needs to be something set up for long-term mental health care.
There's no nice facilities for our chronically mentally ill to go and live the rest of their life, not have to have that high recidivism keep coming into the hospital because of the living conditions or not having a safe place for them to go.
Anyone who may be experiencing suicidal thoughts or any kind of mental health crisis can call or text 988 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to speak with someone qualified to help. I'm Stan Ingold in Richmond.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Partly sunny today, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and 90s. An excessive heat warning will be in effect from 11 o'clock this morning until 8 o'clock this evening for areas in the eastern panhandle. Tonight, partly cloudy, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, lows in the 60s and 70s. And partly sunny tomorrow with scattered rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and 90s. Support for WVPB is provided by Solar Holler, bringing clean energy to families across West Virginia. More at solarholler.com. Beginning in the 1980s, the AIDS epidemic took hundreds of thousands of lives across the country and even more around the world. A new theater production highlights how the disease impacted the lives of Black Americans in particular. And now it's made its way to West Virginia. Reporter Jack Walker sat down with playwright Danya R. Love and his colleagues to discuss the project and what it means to tell this story in the Mountain State.
In 2019, Black Americans accounted for more than 41% of AIDS cases in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But Danya R. Love, a playwright based in New York, says he rarely sees that reality reflected in the arts. More often, retellings of the AIDS epidemic forego discussions of race entirely.
I didn't see myself reflected in the works, right? These works often hold space for white, cis, queer, affluent men. And that's not my story. And that's not the story of so many folks who I know. So I wanted to do, as a dramatist, my part to say, I see you, I see me, I see us.
For Love, that meant writing his latest theater piece, What Will Happen to All That Beauty? It's a multi-generational story about how the AIDS epidemic impacted a black family in the 1980s. But Love doesn't refer to the work as a play.
I call it an offering, and I call it an offering because I think it's so important to note that historically throughout theater and just society, people of color, specifically black folks, have been left out of the conversation around HIV and AIDS, right? So this is a way for me to offer representation, to offer softness, grace, beauty, and love to a community that for so long may not have felt that.
This theme of compassion being denied to black people living with HIV anchors Love's work. But the story also shows how black LGBTQ people still created spaces for community and compassion, often through one another. Coming from New York, Love says putting a production on in West Virginia seemed daunting. He wasn't sure what his reception would be like as a black LGBTQ creative visiting the Mountain State. But he's found that people have been welcoming and that audiences have been receptive of his work even when they might not personally relate to its content.
The folks who see themselves most reflected in the work may not be the ones most reflected in the audience.
But Love says that means the piece, for many, can offer a moment of learning.
Hey, now I know this thing. Now I know what's happening. What can I do with the access that I have, with the resources that I have? How can I help a community that I may not be a part of, but they are a human being on this race, so they're a part of my community in that way.
Love's production is on show throughout July at the Contemporary American Theater Festival at Shepherd University. It's an annual event in Shepherdstown that began in 1991 and brings together artists from across the country. Folks involved with organizing the festival say the type of learning Love talks about is something they consciously want to bring to West Virginia.
I think that as one of the major cultural institutions in West Virginia, that it is our duty and responsibility to serve the community here.
That's Peggy McCowan, the festival's artistic director. For her, serving the community partially means bringing high-quality productions to the state and encouraging community members to show up with initiatives like recurring discounted rates for West Virginia residents. But it also means something a little deeper.
Our responsibility to do that is what enables us to provide the opportunity for this kind of art, which is really asking the audience to participate, to be involved in, to really think about, to profoundly receive and feel something.
And McCowan says conversations that begin in theater can translate to real life learning and change. Associate Artistic Director Teresa M. Davis says the festival's influence extends even beyond the Eastern Panhandle.
We have people that come from all over the country. Last year, I met a couple that said they heard about us, drove all the way from Florida to see the shows. And so we, I think, are very proud to be able to produce work that brings together a community of festival friends from all over, as well as artists who are willing to share their time and energy and space with us here in beautiful West Virginia for this amount of time.
Love, McCowan, and Davis emphasize that getting the festival up and running is a team effort, requiring the support of production staff, actors, and even audience members themselves. In addition to Love's piece, there's a slate of four other plays running through the end of the month. And McCowan and Davis say there'll even be more stories to tell in the years ahead. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Chris Schultz produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.